This is Border Crossings, radio's number one request hour. And now, your host, Larry London.
Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. On our show today, we have a very special guest joining us, a founding member of a band that have sold over 100 million records. They've broken several different kinds of chart records in the UK and been number one on the UK charts several different times. We'd like to welcome Robin Campbell from UB40, who joins us today here on Border Crossings. Stay tuned for a very special Border Crossings program with UB40.
Wise men say, only fools are ashamed, and I am here falling in love.
Hi, this is Larry London, and we welcome you to a very special Border Crossings. On our show today, we are joined by a music icon, somebody who is celebrating not only his, but his band's 40th anniversary together, putting out music for the world to enjoy. You know UB40 and all of the biggest hits in that band's collection. We welcome to our show today Robin Campbell, who's with us.
Hello.
It's nice to have you all the way from London.
Pleasure, man.
Now, are you guys on tour in London right now at this moment?
No, we start touring at the end of this month. We have 40 dates in the UK starting at the end of this month.
Well, you know, congratulations on the release of what is your 20th album? 20-something album, I guess it is, and it's called For the Many. And that's quite a few albums. Now, looking back at your, you know, obviously your chart history, you guys have had 51 chart singles, and you hold a record for the most weeks on a chart, which is 214, I believe it is, as a band. So,
is that right?
Yeah, that's very right. Amazing stuff you guys have accomplished with all the awards and things you're going, you know, experiencing. So tell me about this new album. How does this differ from the last album or from anything else that UB40 have done?
Well, it's we deliberately kind of wanted to go back to our roots, really, and do something that sounded like a continuation of our early 80s records, which friends and family, fans who have heard the album, that's been the immediate reaction, is that it sounds like a throwback album. It sounds like the kind of thing we were doing in the early 80s. So that was exactly what we intended it to be, and we guess it's kind of worked.
How has the writing process evolved for you guys? Because been a couple of band member changes over the years, and so from what you started with 40 years ago to what you do today, is it a different process or is it kind of the same?
No, it's exactly the same. The original writers are all still in the band. Mm-hmm. There's a nucleus of lyric writers. In fact, all the remaining members of the band that are in the band have all written at different times, but the three major songwriters are still in the band and have always been the three major songwriters. So it's not different, really. Mm-hmm. We jam as a band and create the music, and then one member of the band usually comes up with an idea for a lyric that we then fit to existing music tracks.
Mm-hmm. And when you all met, you were attending an art school, I believe, in Birmingham, something like that?
Well, my two younger brothers were both at art school, mm-hmm. and most of the guys out the band went to that art school, yeah, but not everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go to art school. Obviously, I knew all of the guys because they were the best friends of my two younger brothers.
Mm-hmm. Now, for our worldwide audience, most of whom know you, what does UB40 represent? I mean, I have an idea I've heard over the years, but I want to ask you directly, you know, UB40, because you did put out an album, UB44, which is a little confusing. So what does UB40 stand for?
That just meant that was UB40's fourth album.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah, but the name UB40 is it's the registration card for when you're unemployed and you go and sign on every week to get your dole money, your check. You had to sign on to say that you were available for work, mm-hmm. and that was called the identity card was called a UB40 card, and we all had one when the band started. We all were unemployed when we formed the band, so it made sense. A friend suggested it, that we all had a card, and why don't we call ourselves UB40?
And it was
as it happened at that time, there were probably 3 million unemployed in the UK. So there were a lot of people interested in a band called UB40.
Well, fortunately, you guys have never been unemployed, I would assume, with 120 million records sold around the world. But so it was 1980 when you got to go on a tour with Chrissie Hynde. That was kind of one of the biggest breaks for your band.
That was the break, yeah. We were just kind of buzzing. We were being talked to by record companies, and there was a little buzz about us, and we were on our first mini tour in London, where we were doing half a dozen gigs over one weekend, over one week. And Chrissie of the Pretenders, she came to one of the shows, and she enjoyed it, or she must have enjoyed it, because she came backstage and said, I want you on my tour. And she had a number one album and a number one single at the time, mm-hmm. and a sold out British tour. So for us to get that support was phenomenal. I mean, that was... during that tour, we released our very first single, and by the end of the tour, we had a top 10 record. So it was that was the launch pad, really.
And
so
you also recorded with Chrissie, right? I understand you did a few years later.
It took a few years, yeah. Mm-hmm. But she kept saying to us every night when we were on tour with her in 1980, she kept saying, we ought to do a record together, you know. And we spent a few years arguing over which tune it should be. And we finally got a chance because she was so busy as well. For the first few years, we hardly saw each other. So we used to cross paths on tour, you know, mm-hmm. And say, we must get into the studio. And we had built our own studio by then. I think 1985, we recorded the Sonny and Cher tune, I've Got You, Babe. Mm-hmm. So, which became a number one for us. Mm-hmm. Released in 86, so it took a while to do it, but yeah, it was great. And we did a few more with her after that as well.
You guys have performed on stages all around the world, and Royal Albert Hall, and you know, all of the great stages everywhere. And I'm sure you've performed for kings and queens and royalty and whatnot. Looking back on all of this, is there a single moment or an event that sticks out in your mind as a kind of an arrived, this affirmation, this is it, we've made it?
I always get asked this question, and there are so many.
Yes.
There's not just one. Playing Madison Square Gardens with a number one album and a number one single, sold out Madison Square Gardens in New York, was a fantastic thing. We felt like we'd arrived in America at that point. But playing in Russia, we toured Russia before the wall came down. We were the first band to do an actual tour of Russia. Being inducted into the Maori tribe in New Zealand, playing in South Africa after Mandela was released and our apartheid was outlawed, to go there, having observed a cultural boycott for the previous 15 years, to actually go there and play to 250,000 people was a fantastic experience. It was a real hair up on the back of your neck moment, you know, so... There's been many, many, many
of course,
different fantastic...
Ivor Novello Award and all the other awards you guys have won as well. So looking back, I mean, has time gone by quickly for you, or has it been a slow process? I mean, because you guys have been working hard for 40 years nonstop.
It's been a lifetime, you know. But it seems like only yesterday, really. I'm constantly amazed how long we've been going and how much success we've had. I don't think any of us could have dreamt that we were going to last for 40 years, you know. Mm-hmm. 10 years maybe. We were serious about it. We wanted some longevity, you know. We wanted a career. But mm-hmm. for it to go this long and for it still to be so much fun, you know, and
yes.
for us still to be creative, have the creative juices flowing, you know, is and looking forward to touring is a great thing.
Yeah, that's great, because a lot of artists get burnt out, but you guys just keep on doing it. And one of the most remarkable things is that you are doing it with a unique format of music, reggae music, which is loved and appreciated, but it's not really what we, at least here in the United States, would consider to be mainstream. So, I mean, you guys have managed to become legendary in a unique format of music. And I was wondering, because since you started together, you know, as young lads in, I think, the 70s, late 70s, did you ever have a chance to meet Bob Marley? He passed away in 81, but did you meet him or never connected?
No, we never got a chance, really, because obviously we weren't established until the 80s, mm-hmm. and he died fairly soon into our careers, you know. I did see him live. I saw him perform live in Birmingham, my hometown, in 1976, which was, at least half of the band were there at that show, so before we formed the band. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the pivotal moments. It was kind of a catalyst for us forming a band, was that night that we spent watching Bob Marley live.
Mm. And to go to Jamaica and sell out the venues and get the love that you guys have gotten, that must really feel good. I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah, and we've met many, many artists. And of course, we've met Rita Marley and mm-hmm. his sons, and, you know, and we've met and recorded with many, many Jamaican reggae artists now over the years. Which is, you know, for us, that's like a dream come true, you know, to work with your idols mm-hmm. is something else.
On a wish list, who would you like to collaborate with that you haven't yet worked with? Doesn't have to be reggae music, can be any music, any format.
Well, we've just done a collaboration album, and they're all reggae artists, of course. But I would almost work with almost anyone who asked me, really, just because I'd be honoured if someone asked, you know. Mm. But if I could fulfil a dream, I guess somebody like Stevie Wonder, who mm-hmm. I consider to be a genius, you
that
know, if
great.
I could, if I could do something with Stevie, show him how real reggae's done, that would be great.
Now, you guys don't come to the U.S. often, do you? I don't see you're performing here, but I know you're coming here now for the new album. You'll be here in the next couple of months in America.
We'll be there in August, mm-hmm. I think. August, September is when we're slotted in for America. But we used to go there a lot, you know. We've toured throughout the 80s and 90s. We toured a lot in America, but not so much lately. And I guess that was probably to do with the fact that we lost our lead vocalist, and for a while we were working, but we just didn't come to America after about 2009, I think, or 10 was the last time that mm-hmm. we were there. So we intend to change that. We're gonna start working America again. It's
That's
about
great.
Time.
That's great. I know in here in America, they're excited to have you coming back. I keep hearing the buzz from the fans. And I did want to ask you, since you touched about your lead singer, I it's a sensitive subject, I guess, but... as in many bands, you know, that have even brothers, have siblings, you know, Oasis and the Everly Brothers and things like that throughout music history, there have been tensions and issues and problems and whatnot. So it's no secret that Ali, your younger brother, left the band, didn't have flattering things to say, threatened to sue. There's been some issues. What's the status of your relationship at this point with Ali? Because I think you guys reunited in 2014. You guys didn't get together.
No.
That didn't happen. Oh,
no,
okay.
that was a rumor put about by him.
By him,
because,
okay.
Yeah, because he coaxed one of the band to go and join him.
Gotcha.
So, so they kind of sold that as being reunited.
Ah.
In fact,
so we got the exclusive now.
Two ex-members of the band that reunited.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
We still have five original members of the band.
Right.
My other younger brother is our lead singer now and has been for, I think this is his 11th year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of old news, really, that Ali's left, you know. And,
right.
And, you know, to be honest, we were happy when he did, really. It was traumatic when it happened, but it worked out well in the end because we started enjoying ourselves again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the only problem now is that he insists on using our name. He, especially when he goes to America and anywhere outside of the UK, he sells himself as UB40, which is unfortunate. And we have an ongoing court case to stop him doing that, which again is unfortunate and should be needless. But, you know, this is what happens when people try to steal your name.
Right. And when you become famous, you know, there's always issues.
Yeah.
You know, there's always, it leads to many, many complicated issues. So tell me about some of your places to perform, because the Voice of America is reaching many, many countries, 100 countries around the world. And I know you have performed in India a number of times, Sri Lanka, many different places. So tell me about your favorite places that you like to perform for the fans.
Well, one of the favorite places would be New Zealand and anywhere in the Southern Hemisphere, because all of the islands down there, they all love reggae. You know, all of the indigenous people of those islands love their reggae. So we get treated very well down there. And as I say, we were inducted into the Maori tribe in the 80s. So into the nation of Maori. Mm-hmm. So I'm an honorary Maori. So, of course, I love going to New Zealand.
And we're on Mainland TV in New Zealand. I'm just going to send a shout out since that's one of our affiliates, Mainland TV. So
brilliant. Kia ora.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, there's many places we love to be. Mm-hmm. Pretty much if the sun's shining, I'll go anywhere.
As long as there's a snooker hall somewhere, you'll be there, right?
Yeah.
We're talking with Robin Campbell from the band UB40. Now, can you tell me, why do you think it is that America has not kind of fallen in love with reggae music to the extent the rest of the world has? Why is America so far behind when it comes to reggae music? Why do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's always been that way. When we first came to America, it was treated as kind of a novelty music, like it was the kind of stuff you played on your holidays, you know, because if you went to the Caribbean, you heard that kind of crazy music down there, you know.
Calypso.
But, and it just didn't get the acceptance that it got everywhere else in the world, really. It's been a globally accepted mainstream music now for 40 years.
Yes, yes.
And it just took longer in America. I think there are artists in America now that's selling decent numbers, and obviously we've had success in America over the years, just not the same as the rest of the world. And I guess it may always stay that way, which is surprising because there's probably more Jamaicans in America than there are in Jamaica.
Yeah,
you know. So there are pockets of America where you can hear a lot of reggae, and there are a lot of reggae artists living in Florida, Miami, you know, and working throughout America all the time. Mm. There are lots of healthy reggae clubs. It's just not on the sort of arena type of stage, but it's healthy and it's growing all the time. Mm. It's just that it doesn't get the mainstream exposure that it does in other countries.
Well, because of bands like yours, UB40, you know, reggae is, you know, exposed here in America. We know it. You've had number one songs. Your music's been in films too. I mean, you even acted, I guess, in a film, in a movie, Speed 2. You guys were performing in the film.
Well, it was a tiny little cameo role. We didn't get many lines.
No Oscar nominations?
No.
But so the tour is going to start soon. The album is coming out, if it's not out already by the time that people are watching this. For the Many is the name of the album.
Yeah.
What are your favorite songs on the album?
You Haven't Called Me Yet.
Can do whispering words to me, though we're miles apart. I feel you start going to work on me. I'm in a hotel room alone, staring at the phone. I smoke another cigarette. Haven't gone. The sun sends the day, creeping into the gloom. I've wasted the hours counting wallpaper flowers, thinking you'd call me soon. Another cigarette. You haven't told me yet. Counting wallpaper flowers, thinking you'd call me soon. I'm in a hotel room alone, staring at the phone. I smoke another cigarette. You haven't called me yet.
With Larry London. girl, I'm talking about my baby. The love you have for me, you turn into a family. Now your dad, they see you in a different light. But me no one a girl, she's alright. Now I forever more the east, no other.
You are my moonlight love. You are my love, I'm a moonlight love. I'm a girl, you are my love. You are my moonlight love. There is no other.
In the moonlight, her daddy never loved it, he was uptight. But I don't care anymore what he say. Tonight we're gonna tango on the Champs-Élysées. First let me whine and then you. After that me I go dance and caress you. Undress you with my voodoo. You should know by now, girl, I love you. Can't you see that you're the one for me? One on one is two, and later King Tree. Yes, girl, I'm talking about my baby. The love you have for me, you turn into a family. Now your dad, he sees me in a different light. But me no one a grudge, it's alright. Now and forevermore, there is no other.
And that's why you are my moonlight love.
Great. I mean, in the writing, everybody gets a chance to write songs, or is it done collectively, or what's the process for you guys?
Well, lyrically, it's usually one member of the band will bring a set of finished lyrics to the band. We may then work on them and change them slightly. Someone might have an idea for changing the lyrics, but generally, you know, we bring individual sets of lyrics to music that has been created by all of us. We don't write music, we jam it, you know. So we sit in a room together and we play, and what we like we record. And then we put lyrics and melodies onto that.
Now, I mentioned earlier about your success on the chart, 214 weeks, which is just remarkable. It's a chart record, and there's only a couple of bands who've come close to that. Queen is among those bands from the UK, from Britain. What do you make of all the success of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody and Queen, all the attention that their music's getting? Maybe there'll be a movie about UB40 coming out. Who knows? Red, Red Wine. What a name for a movie.
Well, I think we may have to die first.
But is everybody in England, are you guys kind of fascinated by our fascination in the US now with Queen?
I think there's just as much fascination in the UK. I mean, they are, you know, they're a global phenomenon, weren't they? You know, they were a pretty amazing band, and Freddie, of course, was an amazing performer. So it's not surprising, really, that the film is getting that much attention. I've never really been into those kind of biopics, you know, but you know, I think Queen were brilliant, so I'm not surprised that they're getting the attention they are.
Now, how would you feel about someone making a film about UB40?
Bemused.
Well, because there's so many interesting things, and of course the success, and you know, the music, the great music, I think that, you know, it's not a far-fetched idea. Might happen.
Yeah, I just hope they leave it a few decades.
Who do you want to play you?
Brad Pitt, of course.
Brad Pitt, that's what We've got Robin Campbell talking with us right now. UB40 are on the road for the brand new album, which is album 20, For the Many. And we're so excited to have you on our show today. And it's an honor and a privilege to talk to you. And I know that when you come to the U.S., hopefully we can get you in the studio again. Now, when you're performing on some of these big stages, do you have a preference? You've performed for 50,000, 100,000 plus people, Hyde Park, whatnot, these big giant venues. And then you've performed in smaller, smoky, traditional type clubs. Do you have a favorite where you like to perform?
Yeah, we like the small venues. I mean, we still play arenas, but we like to play small venues. We like the intimacy of a small venue. We like the fact that that you know the audience can see the whites of your eyes, and vice versa. You know, it's a different thing. It's a live gig is about an emotional communication between you and the audience. You know, and when it's an intimate gig, the communication is that much simpler, that much more intimate, and I think what you get back off an audience is much easier to understand, you know, and to enjoy in a small gig. And fans have always told us over the years that they love a small venue, they love a small gig, you know. So yeah, we like doing that, and we're deliberately doing that now with this UK tour. Instead of playing arenas, we're playing 40 dates to celebrate 40 years. We are playing 40 dates around the UK. And that means that we can get around the UK properly rather than just playing half a dozen arenas and everybody having to travel to those arenas, you know. It's much nicer if you can play in someone's city centre and, you know, it's easy for them to get to and to get home and you know, have a much more pleasant gig than in an Astrodome.
And one of the special things, one of the rewarding things of being in the business for four decades is you get to see the fans evolve. And now you're playing for the fans, their children, their children's children. And I think that that's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah, it makes you feel old, but
accomplished.
But it's absolutely true. We do play to sort of three generations now of families, of people who were fans when they were kids and they're bringing their kids, you know. So it constantly amazes me how many teenagers are in the audience, how many young people are in the audience singing the lyrics of songs that were recorded before they were born, you know. So That's a fantastic feeling to know that you've got that kind of longevity, you know.
Do you remember where you were when you found out that you had your first number one hit? Do you remember that moment in time?
Yes, we were travelling to a show. I can't remember where it was. I think it was in London. And we heard that that our first record had gone to number one, Red Red Wine had gone to number one. And That was a buzz. We'd been having single success for the previous 3 years, but never getting the number one. You know, always getting top tens, but never doing any better than that. And we got to that point where we thought we weren't going to have a number one. You know, and then all of a sudden, that one did it for us, and you know, we had several since.
It's up to you. so fine. You keep me rocking all of the time. Red, red wine, you make me feel so grand. I feel $1 million when you're just in my hand. Red, red wine, you make me feel so sad. Anytime I see you go, it make me feel bad. Red, red wine, you make me feel so fine. Monkey packing music on the sweet head line. Red, red wine, you give me woolly pazing. Woolly pazing, make me do my own thing. Red, red wine, you really know how to love. You're kind of loving like a blessing from above. Red, red wine, I love you right from the start. Right from the start, with all of my heart. Red, red wine in a 80s style. Red, red wine in a modern beat style. Yeah. Till I die, and that's no lie. Red, red wine can't get you off my mind. Wherever you may be, I'll surely find. I'll surely find. Make no fuss, just.
Then, you know.
And of course, when you go and perform in a country that doesn't speak English, they know all the words to the songs you're singing. That must feel great.
Oh, yeah. As I say, when we played South Africa, and we went there and sing our own song, which was a song that we wrote for, an anti-apartheid song that we wrote for the black people of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And to have them sing the lyrics back to you, and especially when there's 250,000 of them, you know. That was goose pimples, goosebumps.
Mm-hmm. Is there a chance at a Labor of Love 5? Is that something that might be in the works?
If we live long enough, yeah. Yeah, why not? I love doing Labor of Love. That series is all about the songs that we grew up on. You know, mm-hmm. The songs that inspired us to form a band and to play reggae in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
They're all songs from the late 60s and early 70s, before we formed the band.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many of them. I still have a list of 200 songs that I could happily record.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's every chance if we keep going long enough, we'll do a Labor of Love 5, yeah.
Well, you guys have been supported by so many well-respected, famous people, and even in the political world as well. I know the Labour Party, the leader of the Labour Party, was very supportive to you for a number of years, a big fan of yours, came out to your shows, came to meet you guys.
Still is.
Still is a big fan of you. Of course, all your fans throughout the world, and it's just amazing, you know, how many people you've touched with your music and what an influence you guys have been with your music. This current album, For the Many, is there political overtones to this album? I was looking at the artwork for the cover. It looks, I don't know, you know, I'm going to guess that one of these people resembles the American president in the drawing, but I'm not really sure if that was the intention.
It might have been.
Might have been.
Yeah, you're talking about the cover for the single.
Yes,
the gravy
yes.
Train.
Yes, that's the only one I've seen so far.
Yeah, well, we're still a political band, you know. We still have We still have things to say. We still say pretty much the same things that we've always been saying. And obviously, our support is for, you know, the Socialist Party. So
right, right.
Our criticisms will tend to be, in America, of the Republican Party.
Right, right, you know? Right.
I think there's probably some quite critical stuff on the album, lyrically.
I would guess.
and probably one of the songs may be aimed at Mr. Trump himself.
No, what a surprise. Well, I am so excited to hear the album and, as I say, to have you guys here in our studios. It's a thrill and an honor to have you on the program. This is the first time we've had a chance to talk, although I've been playing your music and listening to your music for many, many years. And so thank you for all the great music and for your time.
Thank you.
Which I know is very precious because you've got many interviews to do today to promote the new album. So thank you very much for coming on the show. And it's
absolute
great to meet
pleasure.
You. Robin Campbell from UB40 and For the Many is the name of the new album. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You got a smile so bright. You know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight. You know you could have been a handle. The way you swept me off my feet. You know you could have been a boo. And baby, it's not so sweet. You know you could have been some perfume. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. I can tell you. Where do the things you do? As you are, you know you could have been a flower. Your good looks were made. You know you could have been an hour. The way you stole my yard. You know you could have been a crew. And baby, you're so smart. You know you could have been a schoolboy. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. I can tell you. Things you do. All right, the way you do the things you do. You make my life so rich. You know you could have been some money. And baby, you're so sweet. You know you could have been some honey. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. I can tell you. The way you do the things you do. All right, the way you do the things you do. As pretty as you are. You know you could have been a flower. Your good looks were mending. You know you could have been an hour. The way you stole my love. You could have been a crew. And baby, you're so smart. You know you could have been a schoolboy. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. I can take it. The way you do the things you do. All right, the way you do the things you do. The way you do the things you do. All right, the way you do the things you do.
Well, we're out of time for today. Thank you so much, Robin Campbell of UB40, for joining us on the program today. The band are out on tour celebrating their 40th anniversary together. It's been a long ride and a very successful, enjoyable ride for UB40 fans all around the world. And thank you again, Robin Campbell, for joining us today to talk about the new album and the band's history. UB40, our guests today on Border Crossings. We will be back tomorrow to bring you requests and dedications. Please do join us then. Thank you, Vince Bonner, our director. My name's Larry London, and this is the VOA1 Music Network.